provides some excellent insights, but you'll hear more about that in a minute. Jill has had a very long and successful career at P&G, having done multiple leadership roles in across different brands as a Pantene, Olay, and Always, and has really climbed the ladder in a very nice way there, and has gained a lot of experience, which she is now using to help other companies and businesses grow with a passion for diversity and as a gender equality warrior, which we'll hear more about in a minute, and that's what she's written her book about. Joining us today as well is Hanneke Faber, actually one of the super 7% women that Jill refers to in her book, which we'll hear about more in a minute. Hanneke has worked for P&G, Ahold, and now is heading the global foods and refreshments business for Unilever as a global president, and has a big passion for purpose-driven businesses. Also, proof of that is the Future Foods strategy that was presented just last November, which you can read all about in the different communications and posts, but also with a big passion on diversity. And that is, of course, what we would like to hear more about also today. As a big of a short discussion or a short update on what the order and the how we will organize the webinar, Jill will present her book and tell a bit more about the drivers and the background and the content of the book. We'll have a short Q&A between Jill, Hanneke, before we get into the session as long as possible with you with all the Q&A. So please already, during everything that we're doing now, think of what you would like to ask as a question to Jill, but also perhaps to Hanneke, so that we can have an open discussion on on the theme of why men win at work. Without further ado, Jill has, well, as said, has written this great book. It has some great references, some great introductions, which you'll see here. But I think it's best if Jill tells us a bit more herself about what drove her to write this book, and also what her experiences are. Jill, over to you.
Thank you so much, Valerie, for the lovely introduction. And thank you for inviting me here today. Fantastic to be here with you and with Hanneke as well, obviously. Yeah, so I'll tell you a little bit about how the book came about before we get into the discussion. I always say I absolutely would not have written this book 10 years ago. It wouldn't have even occurred to me to write it. It was really only at the senior vice president level that I started to truly see and understand the gender issue. I think I realize now I've been very, very lucky up to that point. Of course, I've been aware of the issues and the barriers, but it never really got in my way personally. So it wasn't a top thing for me. At senior vice president level, though, I entered a male dominant environment and culture really for the first time in my career, a first time in my life, actually, that I found myself not in a gender balanced environment. I found myself in these meetings, these senior meetings, which were, really largely men, some women, but, 80% men. And I realized very quickly that this was a very, very different experience from being in a gender balanced environment. And I saw the impact of it. I felt the impact of it on myself. I felt I was doing, saying, behaving as I always had, and it had served me very well to that point, wasn't having the same impact. And I could see that happening to the women around me as well, amazing women around me. So actually my response was that I was fascinated by it. I thought, this is actually fascinating. What the hell is this? What is this? What is this culture I can feel? And I actually became quite a student of it. So I read tons of books, tons of articles. And that's when it got interesting, because that's when I started to realize the extent of the issue. I realized, hey, it isn't about me. It's never about me, is it? It's never about us. It's not about me. It's not about these women around me. It's absolutely not about P&G. This is happening to women in companies, in organizations, in countries, everywhere, all over the world. And the data, I mean, the data still staggers me, actually. You know, if you look in pretty much any walk of life, business, sport, politics, wherever, and you look at the top level, the real leadership levels, and you'll see 80%, that's 90%, sorry, 90% men in those positions. 7% of CEOs are women, 7. You know, we celebrate the ones who make it, it's 7%. 9% of heads of state are women. The ones that are pretty high profile, we've talked about them a lot this last year, but it's only 9%. 25% of parliamentary seats worldwide are held by women, 25%. And that's obviously really important, because that's where massively crucial discussions are had and decisions are made that affect everybody. And women are just not adequately represented in those rooms, in those discussions. 25% of what we see, read about here in the news, is about women. And that's partly because only 5% of editors are women. So quite staggering, actually, when you realise the extent of it. And I said to myself, this is actually incredible. And I still say this to myself every day. It's incredible, really, isn't it? When you actually step back and think about it, 50% of the world's population, women, 50%. And all of the data, I mean, it's unequivocal, shows that women are equally intelligent, they're equally competent, they have at least equal leadership capability when that is surveyed. So why? How does that translate to 7% CEOs, 9% heads of state? It's a really, really interesting question. Oh, and by the way, what is also unequivocal, stacks of data showing that when there is equality and diversity in leadership, not just in companies, but at the leadership level, companies are stronger. They absolutely deliver stronger results. Societies are stronger and happier. Relationships are stronger and happier. The world is just better. So I made a promise based on all this that when I left my job, I was going to write a book about this. I had so much in my head, so much I wanted to share. But what was really important to me was to really go beyond the facts and the figures, because, you know, I think a lot of people have done that. A lot of people know them. And what I really wanted to do was get stuck into, why does this happen? Why does this actually happen? Where do all those brilliant and talented women go? A lot of companies recruit at 50%. Where do they go? And, you know, what is, I think, a really important question is, you know, I fundamentally believe virtually all men on this, most men on this planet are good and decent and well-intentioned. I do not believe that most men wake up in the morning, leap out of bed and say, how can I build the patriarchy today and destroy as many women's careers as possible? I don't think that's what's happening. Most men very well-intended and a lot write to me about their intentions and their work as feminists, as I call them. So what's happening here? Why is this happening? And you know, the answer is obviously a lot of invisible, unconscious and really non-intended things that are causing it. And people always ask me, you know, okay, Jill, right, cut to the chase. Why do men win at work then? And I said, well, you know, hold on, there's a 200 page book on this, so it's quite difficult to sum that up in a few minutes. But in reality, there is actually a simple answer. And the simple answer is this: men win at work because the people, men and women, who make the decisions about who gets the job or the promotion, in most cases at the senior levels, they decide because they believe that the man is better. They believe he's a stronger performer. They believe he will do a better job. So the real question is, why do they think that? Because we know that that's not actually always true. Sometimes it's true. Let's say, for the sake of argument, 50% of the time it's true. But it's not true 90% of the time. So the real questions are, why do we believe that they're better and stronger and they'll perform better? And that's really, you know, what I talk about a lot in the book, is really try and get beneath the surface of that and understand the psychology behind that and the things that we're doing to each other that are absolutely unintended, but absolutely causing barriers. So things like, for example, what I call the invisible power of culture, and how that impacts how people perform and how they are perceived. The competence versus confidence equation, and how we are human beings naturally attracted by confidence, and we often miss competence by not looking behind the confidence curtain. What I call the umbrella theory, that so every woman, you know, really should be aware of, that it is absolutely, it's my way of talking about the fact that it absolutely is not enough to do a good job, just to do a good job, and that you have to be visible, your work has to be visible. And I think generally men are much, much more savvy about this. Giving good meeting, which is such an important driver of how we are valued and how our performance is perceived. And, you know, the dynamics between men and women in meetings that affect that. I've just dropped my pencil. So many drivers that I talk about. But what was most important to me probably was that this should be a really positive and constructive book. And it really ends with, and the most important bit, and it's a big chunk of the book, is a massive to-do list. So based on all of the things that I've learned that drive this inequality, despite all the good intentions, there's a huge to-do list for everyone, whether you're a parent, a teacher, a manager, a recruiter, a media maker, a filmmaker, or a woman or a man or whatever gender you are, there's a big to-do list for you. Because for me, what's important is that we understand this and that we fix it and that we just stop accepting this situation where we are over the moon if a woman gets one board position or a woman gets one CEO position, and we think that that's success, and it isn't success. For me, we don't stop until equality. So that's a little bit about it, and then obviously we can dig a little bit deeper in the Q&A into the areas that people are most interested in.
Great, thanks a lot, Jill. Indeed, very interesting, and some very aha things that indeed are described in your book. You have mentioned that you've interviewed Hanneke as one of the Super Seven women, that as an example, and also to include her experiences. What made you want to include her for your book?
Absolutely, I did. Yes. So I have there's a chapter in the book called "The Women Who Win at Work," because there are women who do. It's not 0% of women who make it. And I do call them the Super 7%. And Hanneke was one of the first people I wanted to speak to, and one of the first that I did speak to. I've known Hanneke for a very long time. We met as brand managers, and we knew each other to senior VP level and then beyond, obviously. She's left to go on to do amazing further things. And, you know, I've always admired her so much. I've always liked her so much, obviously, just as a person. But in the business context, admired her so, so much. She is, well, firstly, I mean, wow. The barriers just haven't got in her way. And, you know, I'm sure she'll talk a little bit about what's behind the curtain on that. But, she must have faced, these women like Hanneke, they face the same barriers all women have faced. But for me, she has brushed them off and they've just, you know, not stopped her. And what I love about the way that she's done this, she makes no fuss. She's absolutely a champion of women and a champion of gender equality, but she makes no fuss about it. She just gets on, she does her job, she does it well. And she really shows the way by just doing it. And, you know, absolutely the opposite of somebody who has what I call feminist phobia, because you see a lot of senior women who do have that. They actually disassociate from it. So really admire that about her. And then also on a more rounded level, she's always just been such a role model in the work-life balance sense. Don't get me wrong. I know she works really, really hard, but she's always prioritized, you know, her family, her marriage, her exercise. Her hours have always been, you know, controlled to make sure that she had room for the important things in life. And I think that's so important. And I think it's such an important thing to role model for women, because some women do drop out. They do drop out because they're pushed by some of the equality issues, but they're also pulled by the family. So it's so important that these super 7% women show us, you know, you actually can have a work-life balance and you know, have your priorities in life and still do this. So had to interview her. She's amazing.
Wow, that's a very huge, nice introduction, I think, Hanneke. So thank you for being here and joining us again in our lead call. Do you still see gender inequality as a big issue in our businesses? And what is, in your view, the job to be done still at Unilever also in that space?
Yeah, I'll quote my good friend Jill here, and I'm delighted to be here with her today. Love her book, but let me quote Jill here. You know, we don't stop until there is equality, gender parity at all levels, and she just away from that. And if I stay close to home at Unilever, you know, I'm super proud that Unilever now has a manager gender parity. So at manager level, we have 50 rights. Very top manager level, we don't yet. We're at, 35 and 40 at the end. And that's simply not good enough. So issue, yes. But do we still have work to do? Yes. Because I'm convinced, again, as Jill said, that as a company and as society as a whole, we'll function better if we're a gender parent.
Thank you. Hanneke, you've interviewed Jill. You've interviewed so many women and ladies also for the book. Did you also what does Hanneke have that differentiates her also for other? I was wondering, is there also differences between how they have been successful in climbing the ladder in their companies?
I mean, obviously, you know, I interviewed some incredible women for this as the Super 7% Women Who Win at Work, and they're all very different. You know, these are very, very different women who do very different jobs and do them in a very different way. But interestingly, they all did have many, many things in common, which was super interesting. And, you know, one of them is, well, there are a number of things within that I think particularly, you know, set Hanneke apart and were really strong for her. First one is and I stay away from the rest. And that is, it's just so important. And I have huge admiration for just that awareness, actually, that self-knowledge at a pretty young age, a pretty young stage of a career, to say, I know what I'm good at. I know what my superpowers are. That's what I'm going to bring. That's what's going to help me win. And, you know, I'm really not going to try and do the rest of it. Other people will do that. So I just find that self-awareness and that self-knowledge phenomenal, and that discipline. You know, so many people actually get distracted from their own strengths, and they, particularly if they find themselves in a dominant culture that they don't feel part of, they try to fit in, they'll actually copy strengths rather than, it just, I think, shows enormous self-awareness and strength of character to know that and to stick to it. What I also love about her and sets her apart is she doesn't have perfectionist syndrome. Perfectionist syndrome for me is one of the biggest things that hold women back. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying she doesn't, you know, believe in excellence, but she's absolutely pragmatic in the sense of she knows when something is excellent enough and she does it and she moves on, and she doesn't let herself be held back by that impossible quest for perfection, because, hey, guess what? Perfection doesn't exist. So all of the women out there who are waiting till they're perfect to get things achieved, they're going to wait forever because it's never going to happen. Another thing that massively sets her apart for me is a communication. It's clear, it's sharp, it's witty. And you know, let me just get you an example of this, that some of you may have seen it, but there's a quote in my book from Hanneke. We were talking about this issue of women, 50% of the population, equally intelligent, equally capable, equal leadership ability. Where do they disappear to? And her quote was, yes, it's hard to believe women get more stupid over time. And I love this quote, and I posted this on LinkedIn, and I had to tell you, this is the biggest post I've ever had. I've posted Kamala quotes, I've posted Gloria Steinem quotes, I've posted Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg quotes. No one touches this one from Hanneke. I think we've got about 1,600 likes on this quote. So, and she does that. And I think that's super powerful, because, you know, we talked a little bit, mentioned giving good meeting, but, you know, being able to just, you know, communicate sharply in those gender-ridden situations, super powerful. And I'm going to mention the last thing that really stands out for me. You know, one of the things many of these women have in common is actually no fear. It's the resilience that comes from no fear. So there's it's a very big conversation, actually, but I think a lot of women do have, even at a very subconscious level, not necessarily realizing it, an ingrained fear and nervousness in the presence of big groups, in the presence of men, for example, that come from all sorts of things in childhood. Hanneke, you know, she doesn't have that fear. And she told me, you know, I don't know whether you all know, you probably do, but she is a, you know, an ex-diving champion. And, you know, she said to me, when you stood at the top of that, on that diving board, looking down at that, you know, pin-sized swimming pool, feels like 100 miles away. She said, after that, meetings with angry men, they're not very scary. So I think that's a really powerful thing, is just, you know, is not having that, just not having that fear, that nervousness, and just saying, do you know what, hey, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? And it just is liberating. So she has so many, those are some real superpowers of hers, I think.
Okay, thanks, Jill. Yeah, sometimes the sound is not that good, but every time it improves. So hopefully we will not have that anymore. Last question to you, Hanneke, before we move to the open Q&A. So for everybody in the webinar, please continue to raise your questions using the Q&A button. Hanneke, Jill has mentioned many factors already of things that are key and elements that are key for women to be successful in our companies. Which is the one that most resonates with you? And did you also have these, call it aha moments on your way up that you would like to share with us?
So I'd like to keep it quite actionable and link to Jill's book. I am thankful that I've had great sponsors over time, people who saw me, like really saw me. So we moved that umbrella that Jill talked about and gave me opportunities. And, you know, they were mostly men because there was mostly men above me. But, you know, from when I was a brand manager way long ago at P&G, and one of the vice presidents saw me in a meeting and then said, oh, you, I'd like to offer you a bigger job in Geneva, Dick Boer at Ahold, who took me on his executive committee to do e-commerce and digital when I knew little about that, but was very enthusiastic. To Paul and Alan, who gave me great roles at Unilever. So sponsorship is important. And I think for all of us, let us also try to be sponsors of other women and develop them and give them opportunities. So that is, you know, what we can all do right now. And I'm super excited because, you know, Valerie will know this, but I just made an appointment on my leadership team in the last week that actually got my leadership team. So that's the very highest level at Unilever where I talked about the company's only at about 35%. That got my leadership team to 50-50. But it's also a really cool appointment because the woman I appointed is in the supply chain leadership role. These are mostly male engineers throughout the company. So she's a trailblazer and she's Chinese, which is also very different. So I get excited when I can give people opportunities like that. And I'm excited that my team is now 50-50. And it's 50-50 in a really good way because I've got women in R&D and supply chain and in IT, and I got a man in HR. So I like that. That's not what you usually get. And I hope that I hope and trust it's going to make a difference at helping us grow faster and deliver better results because I know diverse teams do better. So I'm thankful for the sponsorship I got, but I also really am trying to sponsor women and pay it forward. So there you go.
Great, thanks. So opening up for questions now, reading through the various questions that are still coming in the Q&A. One that I think is really interesting, Jill, perhaps one for you. I hear that women are emotional and hence can't be harsh or make strong decisions. To become a distinct leader, do you have to give up being emotional?
Oh, absolutely not. It's funny. I remember, I can't remember who it was at P&G, but she told a brilliant story about how she'd got emotional in a meeting. I think she was at senior VP level, I think, at the point, and she'd been told she was being emotional. And she said, too right, I'm being emotional. I should be emotional about this. This is really important. This is a really important business issue. And if I wasn't emotional, then you should be concerned. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, emotions are, they're part of us, right? And I think, you know, there is, in the book, I talk about it a lot. There is actually science behind it. It's slightly controversial science, but there is science about actually female reactions generally. You have to generalize generally being different to male reactions driven by biology and all of those things. So it's not really an option, I think, not to bring emotion to work. And obviously there are huge positives from bringing emotion and empathy and all of those things to work. I think it's fair to say, though, that like anything, It needs to be controlled and managed. And, of course, there is a difference between being authentic and expressing, how you feel emotionally about something and actually losing control of that. And I think that's true of any emotion, and whatever. So yeah, absolutely. But no, emotion is, I was called too passionate once. I was livid about that. I thought, how can you possibly be too passionate about a business or an organizational issue?
Yeah.
And I do think we have to get used to, I think one of the issues is that we're still not used to women in these roles as men in these roles. And so, our model that we're shown from birth is we're shown men in leadership roles and we're shown women in, kitchens and bedrooms and all those things. And we haven't seen enough women yet doing it the women's way. And obviously it's a generalization because there are men who do it more like women and women who do it more. We need to see more of them. It's one of the reasons there are so many things, but the self-fulfilling prophecy works both ways. If you only see men and promote men, you'll end up carrying that on forever. But once you start to promote women, see women up there and see them doing it that way, we'll just get more used to it and we'll get more used. I think we've seen some very different leadership styles in the last year. And I think we've all really appreciated that. There are very different ways of being a leader, whether you're a man or a woman. And I think we're starting to realize that they all work, they can all work. So I think honestly, it's a case of get more women up there and getting used to, okay, well, yeah, maybe she did show. I don't know whether you all saw the Angela Merkel speech about the Christmas markets. If you didn't, have a look. It's a very short speech, but she gets quite emotional actually, and she's not as it's quite a an outburst in a way for her, and it's super powerful because of that, because she shows you that she really cares and she talks to you like a human being. So I know Hannah's got a point of view on emotion though and how to manage it. She shared that with me.
Hanukkah?
Yeah, I think in most situations, calmness is a good thing because, I always say we're not dealing in our jobs at Unilever or at P&G or at Ahold, we're usually not dealing with world peace. there's hardly ever a mascara emergency, I used to say at Procter. So I think calmness in most occasions at work is a good thing, and humor to go with that is a good thing. At the same time, there are definitely, occasions when it comes to this organization where we should show passion, absolutely. I think when you're generally calm and you show passion every once in a while, it also makes more of an impact, to Jill's point. And I think men do the exact same thing. Many male leaders around me that I really respect and like do show emotion, do generally want to make. So absolutely, don't tuck away all your emotion, but you probably don't want to use it all the time because then it becomes ineffective.
So emotions are also a way to, it's a long-term thing to build emotion, because it's part of the diversity change that we want to bring in. And that's part of the added value, I think, of bringing in diversity in these age groups. We have a very nice next question, Jill, on humbleness. What we are usually, as women, usually more humble and therefore less visible in business. What would be your advice on how to become more visible?
Great question. And this is the umbrella theory, right? I could talk about this all day. I think one of the important things is to break that, cut that connection between being visibility and not humble. they don't go together. You can absolutely be visible and still retain humility. Nobody's asking anybody to be arrogant, and you know, nobody wants that. Nobody's going to like that. But visibility is really, really important. So, you know, let's talk a little bit about the umbrella theory. The umbrella theory is my way of talking about the myth of meritocracy. So many women believe in the myth of meritocracy. They've said to me over the years, hundreds of times, my work should speak for itself. I do great work. It should speak for itself. Why should I have to do all of this stuff? And that is just the myth of meritocracy. And most men are more savvy about this, and they'd actually laugh at that concept, because they know that it's absolutely not enough to be under your umbrella doing great work if no one can see it. Because here's the thing, as far as our bosses are concerned, we're all under umbrellas, right? We're all working under umbrellas, and all they can see is the top of our umbrella. So if we don't move that umbrella aside and say, I'm going to show you, I'm going to invite you in, and I'm going to show you what I'm doing, I'm going to ask your input, they may never actually know about the brilliant work that you're doing. So important, not just to do the work, but to make it visible and make yourself visible. Oh, and by the way, when people make decisions about who to give a job or promotion to, it's not a spreadsheet decision. It's a human decision. These are not decisions that are made by doing. Nobody makes the side-by-side spreadsheet of everybody's results and performance and projects. Or if they do, that's not how they make the decision. They make the decision as a human decision, and they make it based on who they know and who they trust. And we can have a big argument about whether or not that's right, but it's just human. It's the way that the world works. So if we don't invest any time in making ourselves visible and ourselves known, we're going to get very, very frustrated. And it doesn't mean you're not being humble. I think we've got to get over that. Sharing your work, making sure that your work is known, it's just sensible. It's just sensible. And I think one really important point to acknowledge, though, one of the reasons that women generally don't do as much networking and self-marketing as men generally. Well, one reason is they generally absolutely hate it. That's one conversation. But a big reason is that, unfortunately, generally, women are taking 80% of the unpaid work at home as well. And if they do have kids, and I know not everyone does, and they're taking 80% of the unpaid work at home, which, by the way, has just, you know, got even worse in the last year with COVID. They've physically got fewer spare hours in the day. Every one area where we're equal, I always say, we all got 24 hours a day. So a lot of women will say, I have barely got time to do all the work that I have to do at home, to do all the work for the kids, to do all the work for the family, and to actually physically do my job, and to maybe get the occasional hour of sleep. There is no time left for this networking and self-marketing stuff. So there's a very real, tangible barrier there. But what I say to women is, you have to be aware of the umbrella theory. It is very real, and you're going to be very, very frustrated if you stay under your umbrella, do brilliant work. You're going to see people who you don't think are contributing as much as you getting your job. So carve out that time for doing this. And you don't have to do it in an arrogant way. You don't have to not be humble, but you absolutely have to be visible.
Thank you, Jill. We have a very, same theme, of course, but different type. You talked about the men and what role men can play in advancing women. How can we get them to be an ambassador for our movement towards equality?
I'm always doing that.
How can we get them in?
It's so important. So important. It was a massive thing for me when I wrote this book, to write it in a way that was inclusive for men. I worked really, really hard on that. And I have actually had some fantastic feedback from men, which is rewarding because they have felt included. I think a lot of stuff's been written and talked about on gender equality, and a lot of it is alienating to men. I've read some books, they're brilliant books, but after page two, I've thought, if I was a man, this would be on the shelf or in the bin by now. So important, and it's important because, well, pragmatically, we've said men have 90% plus of the leadership of the world. They're making the decisions 90% of the time about who's going to get jobs, promotions, positions. So if men don't buy into gender equality as a good thing for everyone, including themselves, we've got a problem. Women can talk to each other as much as they like. They're not going to get anywhere. So important that men are on board and included. And I think that they understand that discussing gender equality isn't an attack. This is not a, you know, we think you're awful people. It's a conversation that has to be a conversation between all genders. And by the way, here's the irony. The book's called Why Men Win at Work, but, you know, anyone who thinks about it for more than a few minutes will quickly come to the conclusion men aren't winning at work, really. Men aren't winning, really, because their businesses aren't winning if they're run by male dominant groups or any kind of dominant group and they don't have diversity. Their businesses are not winning. They will lose. They will be uncompetitive. But also as human beings, they're not winning. I've had so many men saying to me over the last few months, I really want to be more present as a father, as a husband, as a partner. And my company just doesn't really support it. They say that they do, but really their parental policies and their flex work policies, they're really mum policies. Nobody actually expects me to leverage them. And that is, you know, I've got so many men saying, you know, we want this change. We want our half of that equality as well. Because you know what, equality works across the spectrum, not just in terms of who gets promoted. There are a lot more drivers of equality than that. So important. So it couldn't be more important. And I know this is really, I know this is a massive thing for Hanneke as well. I'd love to hear her point of view.
Hanneke, any point of view on how we can get men to be more involved in and to be an ambassador for our way towards equality?
Yeah, it's obviously super critical because they are still taking the majority of decisions. So very, very critical. I think at work, you know, making sure we continue to share the science that you do get better results is the best way to convince the skeptical. I also, although I don't like it, I think men who have daughters start realizing that they want their daughters to have the same chances they've had. So they're often a more fertile ground. And then I think sometimes you just need rewards. So I like it when companies make diversity, gender parity a part of their reward scheme. So that men are forced to lean in on women and for society as a whole. This is not everyone agrees with me, but I also think when we don't make progress, sometimes in top role, that it does. So that's. We need to use all of these, our own convincing powers, using the emotion of daughters and sticks and carrots in society and in our companies. And then I'm sure there'll be, you know, ever more men who will be supportive of this.
The business, building on that, the business case is so important. When people ask me, you know, to do consulting work on this, and they say, where do we start? And I say, we have to start by getting everyone in that lead team, everyone in that room, believing in the depths of their soul that their business will be stronger. It will perform better if they have equality and diversity. And we don't actually move to the next step until we've got them there. Because once you've got them there, then everything is possible. Then it's okay, tell me what do we do? Then everyone wants to embrace the solutions and the interventions. And you can't actually go anywhere until you've got there, because if you do, it's really just something that's being imposed from above. And then, by the way, you can actually cause more harm. There's a lot of data saying that, for example, just doing diversity training without people really understanding the business case or the, you know, the results case, actually pushes the issue underground and makes the situation worse. It's so important.
Thank you, Jill. There's one specific question on a specific situation that I really like coming up in the questions, Hanneke. What is your top tip for anybody coming in into a meeting with a group of senior male leaders and you feel intimidated? What's your top tip of solving that specific issue in your experience?
A great question, and I'd love to hear from Jill as well. So so my top tip is prepare like crazy.
Yeah.
And I'll give you one example of something that I experienced in the last year. So I had just been appointed as the president of the Foods and Refreshments division at Unilever when we had an investor day. So this is when you have all the analysts and investors from Wall Street in a room. And I needed to present, and I needed to present to them that, you know, F&R was actually a good business case to invest in, which was scary. I didn't know most of them. I did know that a lot of them were quite skeptical on their foods business. So what did I do? Prepare, prepare, prepare. And what does that mean? I read everything they'd written about us so that I knew their biases and their questions in advance. Then of course I prepared a good presentation and I practiced it. I made sure that I worked with investor relations and they threw every difficult question at me in advance. So when you have something that's really important, really go all out in preparing. And I don't prepare like that for most meetings, honestly. Sometimes I just wing it. But when you get into an important situation like that, prepare, really get under the skin of the men you're going to be speaking with, because these were all men, maybe not all, but 99% men. And make sure you know your stuff and that you're prepared for whatever question that gets thrown at you. And I was really pleased afterwards. It went well. And afterwards, there was some relief, because they always write up, you know, publicly what they thought and who they thought was good and bad and ugly. And it was pretty positive. So that's good. But prepare, prepare, prepare. Jill, any
Jill.
Tips from you?
Yeah, no, I mean it's fantastic advice, and I think, I mean, that's a terrifying situation. I think whether the room's full of men or women or whoever, really, but fantastic advice. I think the thing that I would add is actually a more general point, which is the preparation for that situation. Or any situation where you're entering the room full of senior men, it starts way, way, way before. And you know, the big advice that I give to women, I mean to everyone, but we're talking about women here, is really, really know your strengths. Really do that work on knowing your strengths. Anyone who knows me knows I'm a massive fan of StrengthsFinder. I think it's absolutely superb, because what it does is it tells you, you know, really the top 10 things that are your natural talents, your strengths, the things that can be real superpowers for you. You're just, they're real gifts. They're universe given gifts. And then there are things at the bottom that, you know, frankly, you're never going to be good at. Don't worry about them. Know those strengths and really do that work on them to the, you know, actually these really are, I mean, no, nobody can take these away from me. Even if somebody attacks me on these things, I'm going to go, no, 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 I know I'm good at this. You can't actually take me down on this. And what that does is it helps you build what I call your confident core, that real core. And think about it like an apple. An apple's got soft, squidgy bits. And sometimes it gets bruised at the outside, but it's got a really, really solid core. That's what you're looking for. And use that, know that. And when you go into any situation, speak from there. Speak from there and know that when the discussion or the questions go near those areas of strengths for you, you will just feel so much more confident about talking about that. And that will be obvious. People will hear it in your voice. They will see it in your face. They will feel it in your body. So do that work generally, and you'll be ready for much, much more ready for those situations. But having said that, I am not denying that it is intimidating. Yeah. And it's intimidating because sometimes the dynamics are difficult. But I think possibly one of the biggest messages I'd have for all women is be aware of this stuff, be ready for it, be prepared, as Hannah said. Don't let any of these things blindside you, because if you prepare for them, you'll manage them, all these situations, so much better.
Thank you, Jill. We have plenty of questions still left, but unfortunately only 5 more minutes in our webinar. I've just scrolled through all the questions. There's quite a few that are really coming back in the book. So also there, I think it would be really good to get the book, either the virtual version, the cloud version, or the real book. But it's really interesting, and there's a lot of things, all of it coming back also in the questions, but also in the book. Before we close, few closing comments, perhaps starting with you, Hanneke. Anything you'd like to share with us before we close the call, and then Jill, up to you to close it.
Yeah, I did see that the top question was about work-life balance, so maybe I'll just use my closing comments for that. You know, we all are so much more than just the jobs we do, and that's why work-life balance is so key, because if you don't have that work-life balance, you become only the job you do, and everything that goes wrong in your job are horrible. So work-life balance is key. How do I do it? I'll give you 3 headlines. One is, I don't do lawns. I learned this from actually a really senior manager at Caterpillar early on in my career. And he said, I don't do lawns. I, you know, delegate, so he doesn't actually mow the lawn. And I thought, wow, that's actually great. And I also shouldn't do lawns. I wasn't doing lawns anyway. But, you know, everything in the house that where you don't add value, where others can do the job just as well as you can, delegate. And yes, maybe it costs you some money, but don't clean, don't even cook if you don't have to, if you don't love it. So delegate, don't do lawns. That's the first one. Separately, use your calendar. I am a total calendar. I'm very tough on my calendar. So I don't schedule after 5:30. I don't schedule meetings before 9 because I need that time for me. And of course, there's always an exception every I schedule thinking time in my calendar. So just be tough. And I don't just do that now. People say, well, now you can, you know, you're the big boss, you can do that. No. I've always done that from day one. I've always left the office at a reasonable hour so I could have dinner with my family, so I could help with homework, so I could do other things. And you have the power to do that, all of you. And the last thing is exercise. You know, big believer in body and mind. So you must exercise right now. You know, we're all in COVID, we're all locked up. But at 5:30, I'm out in my yard in the dark right now, exercising with some silly video. I try to get my the kids that are here, my husband, to join me, so we also have family time. And it's not the most brilliant, you know, elegant way of exercising, but exercise, it clears the mind. So there you go. I'll leave it at that.
Totally agree with all of those. And she really does this. Anyone who knows her, she really does this stuff. I think two final thoughts for me. One for women, one for men. Be aware, women, just be aware as early in your career as you can. You know, read this book. Read what you need to read. Be aware of these barriers. They may not have hit you yet, but they will. If you continue with your career, I promise you at some point you'll enter a male dominant environment and these things will hit you. Be aware now, be ready now, be prepared now. I wasn't. So that's the big advice. And, you know, specifically within that, really be aware of that umbrella theory, because you're going to get very, very frustrated if you stay under that umbrella. And then for all the men out there, it's really a plea, please join us. Read this book, understand this issue, understand this data to the depth of your soul, that your business, organization, relationship, society and world will be better if we have equality and diversity. And, you know, sign up, be what I call a feminist, be a feminist, be one of those men who speaks up, be one of those men who says, you were interrupted, I'd like to hear what you were going to go on to say. Be one of those men that when somebody raises a gender equality point, you know, you're the man who said, yes, absolutely, I think we should discuss this. I think this is an issue. So it's not just the women in the room talking about it. Because I can't tell you how powerful it is when you do this. It is the thing that will get us equality. I can promise you, women cannot do this without you.
Thanks, Jill. Very impressive. For the one that want to know more and hear more or contact Jill, the contact details of Jill are on the screen now. I also saw that there are some tips of where to get the book in the comments box already. Looking at the time, I would like to thank you both very much, Hanneke and Jill, for attending and joining us in this webinar. I think it was really interesting, also looking at the number of participants, but also the number of questions coming in. Thanks a lot. We'll be continuing to continue to watch, to look at you and follow you on LinkedIn and see how you help us. But also, I think there's quite a lot of people now in the call also that understand a lot more, that will read the book, but also will use all the tips and tricks to further advance in our careers. Thanks a lot for all your help and efforts. And thanks for all the participants also for joining today. There's more to come during the year. Please continue to follow us on the LEAD in general, but also for the Dutch chapter for LEAD. And we'll be coming back to you again for our next activities as well in the coming months. Thank you all and have a good day. Stay safe.
Thanks so much.
Bye, Jill. Bye, Valerie. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
See you soon, I hope.
I hope so, too.